Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Today on Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to be talking about the impact of the coronavirus outbreak on health insurers and the impact of the outbreak on the transition to value-based reimbursement. As always, our resident experts on Foresight Friday Roundup to comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
Morning.
Morning, Dave. Hanging in there, watching my ponytail grow.
Oh, that's just an ugly thought to start this Friday with, Dave. Don't go there.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's kind of interesting is just the change over the last week and how many people are wearing masks. You know, at least in Chicago, it's almost universal. And, you know, nobody wants to get the stink eye from the old ladies in the grocery store. So,
yeah, for sure.
Well, let me, before we get started, tell me something that you guys ate or tried to cook for the first time while you were sheltering at home. Dave, you have any, did you try to give something a go?
We've figured out how to cook with tofu, which we'd never really done before. And it's, so we bought a tofu press and dusted off the wok, and we've been doing a lot of Asian cooking.
Gary? What's new on the menu at your house?
I'm on a need to know basis in terms of our menu, guys. So whatever comes out of the kitchen is what I eat. Actually, though, smart. Dave, there was some Asian cooking here in the last couple of days that I think was new for our household. So that's all I can contribute here. Let's get to healthcare, guys. Let's get to healthcare.
All right. Yeah, we'll all be able to open up restaurants, right, when we're all done with this. All right. Dave, last week we talked about the financial impact of the outbreak on providers. Now let's talk about how it's affecting health insurers. Do you think, you know, are they going to be sunk by billions of dollars in COVID-19 related claims? Or do you think they're going to save money from this big drop in elective procedures and routine medical care? Which way do you think it's going to go?
Well, talk about the big insurers. They're doing just fine, and you don't need to take my word for it. The United Healthcare and Humana are trading at or near 52-week high levels, actually record high levels, despite what's happened to the market overall. In fact, UHC United has publicly come out and said they're not changing their guidance in terms of the financial forecast at all for this year. So I think overall they're just doing fine. You know, contrast that to the big publicly traded healthcare companies like HCA and Tenet, who are down significantly. Tenet is trading at about half of its 52-week high level. So it feels like the insurers are doing just fine. They're also, I think, covering themselves on the PR front. They've come out and said that patients won't have any copays or deductibles for COVID-19 related care. Now, that's only a fraction of the total bill, so self-insured employers will be picking it up. I also think they're going to make a real effort not to do surprise balance billing. You kind of look at it, you know, the pluses and minuses. On the plus side, not having to cover elective surgeries is huge. You've also been just a dramatic decline in everything else, which is affecting hospitals, doctor visits, ER visits, not related to COVID-19, and so on. So lots of relief there. On the negative side, they're losing some members as these layoffs go through. A lot of people shifting probably to Medicaid, although they make back some of that to the extent that they're doing Medicaid managed care. And if and when they do get hit, I'm sure they'll have their hands out to the government for a bailout. But overall, I don't think we need to worry about the insurance sector anywhere near the extent we need to worry about the provider sector.
Gary, are you worried about health insurers and how they're going to come out on the other end of this?
Well, I'll just follow up Dave's last point. Let's think about the ecosystem that we're involved here. So there's this pandemic, and who all is involved in it? Well, we've got insurers, we've got like the federal government, like United, et cetera. We have the providers, which would be like the health systems, doctors. We have the suppliers, like the drug companies and device companies and so on. And then a whole lot of supply chain. So if you thought about the ecosystem in a crisis like this one, or any other crisis, doesn't necessarily have to be this, could be a hurricane, et cetera. So what responsibility should any one of the parties in this ecosystem play? And as Dave said, there's some positives and negatives to the health insurers. I would agree that they, by and large, feels like the advantages to the health insurers in not having to pay for elective surgery is probably going to outweigh the disadvantages to losing members and so on. I think they have largely, particularly the nationals, the large regionals have said that they won't charge for testing. They won't implement their co-pays, but the elective surgery piece is probably the big one. So I think there's a discussion that's worthy to have here about who's responsible in a crisis like this in this broader ecosystem. And I know there are some health insurers talking about picking up a piece of this response that the health providers are really getting hit with in terms of expenses and lack of revenue. So it may be that there's some kind of adjustment as we go through. But I think there's a broader discussion under the assumption that we're going to have more of these kind of pandemics that we should have about who in this ecosystem is responsible and in what cases should they be.
Dave, do you agree with that all for one for all ideal that Gary described?
I got to say, the reality is more, everybody for themselves. Nobody's on nobody's side. It's almost like this COVID-19 is a hot potato that's going to get passed around and nobody wants to get the full burden of it. And what it really is doing is showing the limitations of the fee-for-service way of paying for healthcare, where people try to avoid risk and don't take the preventative actions to limit outcomes and costs, or to improve outcomes and limit costs. And we're going to talk in a second about what comes out of this. But my hope would be that we get a whole lot more equity between the payer and the provider sectors on managing the actual healthcare risk of populations and episodes of care. And if that comes out of COVID-19, then that will be a great thing for America.
That's a good transition to our next topic, and that's value-based reimbursement. And maybe it's just a finer cut of the first topic, but Gary, how do you see the outbreak affecting the transition from fee-for-service medicine to value-based care?
Well, I think in the short term, there's so much distraction that it's hard to think that the movement toward value-based care is going to go very far. Longer term, as both of you are suggesting, it could play into a broader discussion about who's responsible and for what are they responsible. For example, the movement towards social determinants of health, to the extent that that is accelerated, as we're now looking at the importance of population health, that would be a good thing. That would lead to more kind of variants of value-based health. I think we would all agree that there's been several over the last 50 or 60 years, have been several movements towards some type of public health, whether it's social determinants or under some other name. It hasn't gone very far because nobody's willing to pay for that. So if the discussion coming out of this crisis is that there is a responsibility that the U.S. has for its people, and it does fit into the public health space, whether it's social determinants or some other name, then I think that would be a good thing. But as Dave was saying, to some degree, everybody's out for their own interests. And so who's going to pick up the responsibility for public health isn't clear, but that is the discussion I think that should be undertaken here as we go forward.
Dave, what do you think about the impact on this transition from fee-for-service? A lot of people are saying in the short term, we're going to need fee-for-service to restock the coffers. Where do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a story. We're doing these virtual dinners with friends as we discover new ways of being sociable. And we had one a week or so ago, and one of the people is a psychiatrist, and we were asking her how things were going. And of course, she's doing all of her counseling sessions now over video, and she focuses mostly on anxiety. And she said the overwhelming response from her patients is saying, well, everybody's anxious about COVID and being locked up and when we're going to get back and so on and so forth. And they say, you know, welcome to my world. That's what every day has been like for me the last, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. So I guess I'm maybe a little more optimistic than Gary longer term. I just think we're fundamentally changing some of the care modalities, the vast expansion of virtual care in many forms, the benefit of seeing what happens when people practice at the top of their license, the relaxing of some of the cross-border regulation about practitioners, so on and so forth, I think are going to be really, really positive longer term. It's going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And also, it may redirect some of the pharma effort too. Pharma's been going, you know, whole hog on orphan diseases and charging huge amounts of money for genetic-based cures that help a very small part of the population. Think of the effort that's now going to go into vaccines and cures for these types of viral outbreaks. And I think that could be a good thing too, because we really do need the pharma industry to think more about broader pop health. So I think those are going to be with us after we come out of this. And, you know, as I've always said, we're not going to reform healthcare until we change the way we pay for it. You know, that issue was already on the table. Mark Harrison, the CEO at Intermountain, has said healthcare isn't becoming unaffordable. It is unaffordable for the vast majority of Americans. I guess the last thing I'd say is some of the fractures in the system are becoming more apparent. The impact of social disparities on this, low-income people getting it at 7-8 times the rate of higher-income people, and that's a direct result of low-income people having higher levels of chronic disease and probably also being more exposed because they can't shelter in place to the same extent. My guess is that will get a lot more focus. Mental health, like I talked about at the beginning of my answer, will get more focus. And it's hard to believe that we won't have a greater emphasis on prevention, particularly since when we come out of this, it's not going to be a quick process. It's going to involve testing and compliance and so on and so forth. So prevention goes along pretty nicely with that. So I think longer term, I'm optimistic that COVID will accelerate a process that was already underway toward value-based care.
Gary, give me one or two sentences on what you think will be the big story next week.
The big story is increasingly going to be recovery, and it may be a little early for that, although there are certain parts of the country that either are through the surge or the surge never really was a factor, a big factor for them. So the question is, what's the recovery going to look like? And I think that would be a good topic to discuss. And then the other one is the one I mentioned about will the genie be put back in a bottle for some of these waivers and relaxation of regulations that CMS has been responsible for?
Sounds good. Dave, same thing. Give me a few sentences on what you think will be the big story next week.
I think Gary hit the nail on the head that we're starting to hear much more serious conversation about how we come out of this. And it's dawning on both the policymakers and the general public that for us to emerge, we're going to need much greater testing and tracing capability. We're going to need ways to identify who's immune as well as who captures the disease. We're going to need to quarantine those that do capture it quickly. We're going to need to protect those that are the most vulnerable. These are massive public health challenges. And I think the sort of these local coalitions of states coming together to pursue best practice is an indication of how seriously the governors and the states are taking their local responsibility of bringing their particular markets and states back up to whatever our new normal is going to be. And it's a reflection of our federalist system, which has always balanced federal and state power. And I think the states in many ways are stepping up, states and cities
Sounds great, guys. I think one topic we'll need to talk about in the future is, are we seeing the end of the reign of the healthcare administrator? I mean, will an administrator ever be able to tell a frontline doctor what to do in the future? I'm not sure. I think that dynamic is going to be really, really interesting to watch. That was great, gentlemen. Thank you. That's all we have time for today. As always, I appreciate your comments and your insights. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed today, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.